Johnson.
Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay. Attraction, never a supermarket parking lot. I'm the king of Kansas City. No thanks, Omaha, thanks a lot. Kansas City star, that's what I are. You're the leader, daddy, you're the same car. Drop a big old Cadillac.
Given a assist right here, it would be to Mike Gerschle's boat. He had a feeling Bautista would go to second rather than the plate. So when Bautista went to second, Mike Gerschle kept his eye on Kane and waved him home.
Never supermarket parking lot. I'm the king of Kansas City. No thanks, Omaha, thanks a lot.
Side ball four, first and third, nobody out.
Well, we're clearly seeing the effect of the layoff for Davis.
Now it's Navarro. There goes Pilar, struck him out, no way. But down to second is Pilar, the infield in.
It's a sharp ground ball through the infield. He got the lead.
Kansas City star. That's what I want.
Outside. So now it's 2-2. Davis the set and the pitch. Swing and a miss. And Ramirez strikes out. 2 down.
Ramirez taking it to the trash can. Now it's Donaldson. That's it. He's stuck in second. Back-to-back American League pennants for the Kansas City Royals. And off they go.
Thanks a lot.
I'm gonna have a Popeye cartoon in a minute.
All right, and we are back to Sportsaholics episode number 89, the Mike Ditka episode. That was more of a Massachusetts accent than a Boston.
Ditka. No, it's a Ditka. We're Ditka, bro.
And so Ditka, unfortunately, we'll never find out if there is enough room for both Joe Maddon and Mike Ditka, which we discussed last episode with very funny man, John Huck. Because the Cubs lost, they got swept by the Mets. They didn't even really put up much of a fight, and I was a little disappointed. I just expected at least a game six. But to get swept, good for the Mets though. Their pitching staff is young, phenomenal, as everyone's saying now. They're not throwers; they're pitchers.
Oh, they're pitchers. They're not throwers. They're pitchers. That's what they're saying,
Chief. That's what I heard. And so Ditka, let's say, played back in the 60s, obviously, Super Bowl winning coach with Chicago in 85, and main lead character or idol and one of my favorite Saturday Night Live sketches of all time, and, you know, the Coach Ditka sketches.
He is a cultural phenomenon. He is not just a great coach. He is a cultural phenomenon.
And he was got his coaching chops under Tom Landry. Well-known fact. I just now learned.
That's pretty well-known fact. But also, you know, and I'd like to give a shout-out to Ditka, for Mike Ditka also, because he had Ditka's restaurant in Chicago. Good friend of ours at the Comedy Store, one of the managers there, James Toby Simmons, worked at Ditka. So we give a crowd out, you know, come on, guy. Toby, a good friend, Bears fan, Chicagoan, you know, nobody's more Ditka than that guy except for Ditka. And so, cultural phenomena. And then here we are. Caesar, we have a Royals-Mets World Series. Now, I have, as a Red Sox fan, as a diehard Red Sox fan, I have been in the position are in right now. Now, you lost the World Series last year, which was very interesting. But I've been in the position of being, you know, on the eve of a World Series, fortunately, the last few times the Red Sox have won. So I want you to tell us what every Royals fan is feeling right now.
I mean, validation, I guess, because I mean, we all believed, I mean, that we would get back to the World Series, having seen the way last season they rewrote the rules of baseball offensively and defensively. And when you change the face, the way that a sport is played, and you give reason for other teams to emulate the way that you play that sport, that says you're doing something right. When you change the game in a positive direction, in a more entertaining direction. So I saw all those tools in the franchise, and that's not even on the field. That goes up, to the general manager, Dayton Moore, David Glass, the owner, finally greenlighting a lot of decisions and giving Dayton his full faith and a fairly open checkbook that hopefully gets a little bit wider and wider as they continue to win, which is really one of the major reasons why I am excited, because as attendance records continue to be broken, merchandise sales go up, I would like to believe that will translate out onto the field as far as paying whatever it's going to take.
Absolutely.
Whatever it's going to take.
You're a small market team, but you work your way. You guys could literally purchase your way into a mid-major team.
Well, and it's not even maybe necessarily grabbing the biggest free agent, but there's a few things that factor in here I think that are very key. One for next season and is you keep Alex Gordon, and there's a few things here. His Nebraska roots. He lives in Nebraska. He's played with the Royals, drafted by the Royals, a regional guy. Nebraska people drive down all the time to Kansas City for the games. There's a big Royals, obviously the Triple A Royals team, the Omaha Storm Chasers, formerly known as the Omaha
Great
Royals.
Great name.
So whatever it takes to get Alex Gordon in a Royals uniform, hopefully retire in a Royals uniform. I know maybe he's asking, just give him a 6-year deal. And they're like, oh, you know, he's old, or just let him, who cares? He's been here. He didn't leave before. He took the deal already. Give him an extra year. Give him $20 million a year, whatever it takes. And then the other wild card thing that I would be curious to see if there would be any interest, if they could match the numbers as Los Angeles would be willing to put up, but a Zach Greinke pursuit. Bring him back to Kansas City as a free agent and say, Zach,
you think he could possibly come back?
Well, I think it depends on what, if they can pay him 30, if they can give him a 7-year, $220 million. And I think they can afford that. And what that says to the fans is, guess what? We have a stopper for the next 6 years guaranteed, and some stability at the front end of our pitching staff. And he played here before, and I think they go in, they take a meeting with his people, Scott Boras, have Zach come in and sit down and say, you carried this franchise on your back for 4 years. You're the reason this franchise is successful right now, having gotten 2014 ALCS MVP Lorenzo Cain, 2015 ALCS MVP Alcides Escobar, in a trade for you 5 years ago. Why not consider coming back? We have the budget now. We're a small market team. You won't be swamped with the media that you have in Los Angeles, and just kind of, you know, think about ending your career here. Now, Zach Greinke's a pitcher. I personally think he can probably go at least 10, maybe 12 more seasons. He's not. Once he loses his stuff, if you will, like his speed, he can dance the ball everywhere. He's got, you know, he can move Tom. He can Maddox you for 15 extra years. You know, maybe pitch 20 years if you really wanted to. The guy's an incredible pitcher.
I've been pitching him 20 years. I love what you're saying. Now, but see, if I can for a second, what I want to take you back for a second, as you're making these off-season moves, which I'm really surprised you're talking about the future and offseason and what you're going to do afterwards when you have a World Series
well,
right in
I know,
front
okay,
of you.
I know. I'm sorry. I got sidetracked.
No, you're way ahead of yourself.
I am.
Here's actually what I wanted to talk to you about is, like, here's what I remember. I remember that the Red Sox in 03 lost Game 7 because Grady Little, Pedro Martinez, Tim Wakefield, Aaron Boone, and I remember that, and then they fired Grady Little, and then a year went by, and all of a sudden – the Red Sox fought their way from down 3, down 0-3, and they fought their way back to a Game 7. And I remember sitting there going, oh, my God, do you realize how crazy it is to have gone an entire year and fired your manager, done everything that you've done, and now you're back here, and you traded Nomar Garciaparra, and you're back here, and you're back in the same game, and not the same Game 7, but another Game 7. So here's what I'm saying. It's like, I think it's often underestimated. I think in the world of sports talk radio, we often underestimate how hard it actually is to get to a World Series, to get to a Super Bowl, to actually get to the finals. It's easy for us who sit in and watch TV to go, oh, you know, LeBron James, well, he's 2 for 6, and he's not as big of a winner as Michael Jordan is. But there's also a point of just like, hey, anything can happen when you're in these playoff games, when you're in, you know, you're in those NCAA Final Four games, when you're in these playoff games, like, you know, there are times when maybe Montana or Aikman or Brady or Peyton Manning should have won, but they lost, and so they don't end up with an additional Super Bowl ring on their resume. And so I just want to talk to you about, like, how do you actually feel? It's like, it's easy for us to sit there and go, well, the Royals went last year, so of course they're back this year. But take me through what it was really like to get you there. Take me through the roller coaster. You were there, you lost, you had spring training. Take me through it. And well, where you were, see, you know, month by month, take me through how you got to where we are now.
So starting,
you are thinking about, and then I want you to talk to me about the Mets and how you think you match up.
Well, so first of all, before we get into that, guys, just to preface real quick, this is a great episode. We got Micah Pichel from Iration on. He's going to talk about being a diehard 49ers fan. We get into this, the new stadium and an old Candlestick. I mean, their whole team just got gutted.
Because absolutely, somebody has to be a diehard 49ers fan, because those are the only people that could like how the 49ers are playing in Santa Clara. I think someone needs to say that stadium that they play in is cursed. And by the way, yes, Super Bowl 50 is being played in that cursed stadium. I think the 49ers can't win in their new stadium.
We talk about that. We talk about his golf, love for golf, 4 handicap, amazing golfer. But of course, that'll be later on. And guys, thank you for listening. The Heidemann Ball episode, like just thousands of listeners. So guys, thank you for sharing, getting the word out. Remember, go to pinetarpress.com if you want to read the article. I also edited a little video on YouTube. If you YouTube go or in search Sportsaholics with an X, that will surely pop up. I got it.
Heidemann Ball.
I got it. Well done, Josh Heidemann. The Heidemann Ball. That was a huge play. ALCS game 2, 7th inning, down 4 runs, and that incident sparked the comeback. So thank you, Josh, for that. But that happened, you know, in October, and you wanted to start off season, right?
Well, I'm just saying that it's like, what I'm really saying is you went to the World Series last year.
Yeah.
Take us through whatever's important in between the last 12 months.
Well, okay. So immediately following, 10 minutes after we lose the World Series, devastated, but just thrilled to have even been there. And, you know, after all those years of just what seemed like every decision the Royals made as a franchise was going to be the wrong decision, no matter what that was, just to have gotten there was a victory. And we didn't win, but
for a long time, you'd have to say the Royals felt like a minor league team.
And we were.
Actually playing in a World Series were remote for decades.
Look.
And now they're really tangible.
And not only that, but just have guys that, I mean, yeah, they put together some big hits, but now we're looking at it. We're looking at a team, and these guys won championships in AA and AAA and together, you know. And so the homegrown guys are coming around, and that just attributes to drafting and kudos Dayton Moore and all the guys in the front office, Art Stewart, my man, and all those guys, which are obviously doing a great job. So
Art Stewart, our favorite all-time interview in Sportsaholic. Yeah.
Most definitely. Love you, Art. Keep up the great work. I'm sure he had something to do with that Jersey scouting report. Hey, throws the ball to second. Let's go ahead and send Lorenzo Cain home on a single from first. Deal. Let's do it. Safe. We win. Game over. But anyway, so we lose game 7 and a little bit of devastation, but still just kind of in shock that we're in the World Series, very much looking forward to a bright future. Off season comes, winter meetings just happened to be down the street, able to attend a few days of that, which kept me.
Oh, I have video evidence on my television in Los Angeles right now of you stalking the Baseball Tonight guys or the Major League Baseball guys. I forget who was. I have it on one of my channels.
I'm gonna.
I have you walking around in the background of a San Diego hotel. Absolutely, that did happen. All right, so that winter meeting.
I gotta get that footage too. By the way, so that kept me like involved. Like I was still excited, and I'm around. You know, there's Scott Boras 10 feet away, just getting hounded by the press, and it kept me. And then you walk in, there was an 80-foot picture of Kauffman Stadium from the World Series. You know, as a big wall banner. You know, and it was great. So then it comes spring training, and the Royals continue to kind of win, and even though it's spring training, it's another reason to be excited about the team. And so they kind of take that momentum in, and then I think they won 7 or 8 straight games to start the season. So just right out of the bat, they sweep the I think the White Sox and maybe the Indians or whoever it was. They started off hot, and from there which was great. That was another small victory. That's something else as a Royals fan, you know. When April is over, your record is going to be 8-18. That's just how it was every year. Or if you're lucky, like 13-12, you know. And so to come out of that month, I think like 6 or 7 games over 500, you know, was incredible. And so going into May, and then you got, I think Alex Rios gets hurt. So then you get the introduction to Paulo Orlando in April. He hits those 3 triples in Anaheim, and everyone's kind of his coming out party in Kansas City. And it was obvious, you know, it's baseball. It was a long season. You know, skip forward a few months. Alex Gordon gets hurt out all of right before the All-Star game. Actually, you know what? Let's touch on the All-Star game, because that in itself was fantastic. Kudos to you fans out there for voting for the Royals like myself hundreds of times. We almost got, I think, 7 All-Stars in. We got, you know, the entire coaching staff. It was just the Royals All-Star game, which was great because we won it and now have home field advantage at Kauffman Stadium for a possible Game 7. So that was July, which was a fantastic month. Alex Gordon does get hurt. So that gives Alex Rios a little bit more time in the outfield. Obviously, Paulo Orlando, Dyson, Kane, those guys, they're kind of rotating through. And then at some point in August, they get kind of hot, and they get 31 games over 500. At this point, I think that was the highest they got over 500 in the season. And I think that was the highest, most games over 500 they'd been in a season since 1980. It had been like 35 years or something, you know, historical like that. And so everyone's excited and we're killing it. And then September rolls around. 40-man rosters expand. You know, Terrence Gore gets the call up. They bring up Miguel Almonte, our top pitching prospect, gets called up, which coincidentally gets shelled, ends up costing us a game almost immediately. Terrence Gore is still on the playoff roster. I love you, T. Gore. And he also responds to tweets. So if you tweet at him, he'll probably respond to you. But September, we are horrible. I think we lose like 4 in a row, maybe win 1, lose 2, win 1, lose 3, just that entire month. And then right at the end of the season, we clinch for the first time the AL Central Championship. It was a Thursday night there at the end of August. And first time we had won the Royals as a franchise, a division championship in 30 years since 2004. Or 1985. And so that was nice. And I was actually at the game the next day as they hoisted the banner. So that was kind of cool to be there in person as they raised the AL Central Champions banner. And then at that point proceeded to bench all of their starters, put into play every single member of the Omaha Storm Chasers just about. And then they almost got no hit by the Indians. But the game wasn't about winning or losing. It was all about the flag. And so they lose a couple more, but then manage to get hot right at the end of the season. So going into the playoffs, have won 5 straight games. So that for me, to close out the end of the regular season with 5 straight wins, we didn't back into the postseason. The Indians, you know, actually, you know what it was? A good sign for me, we swept the Twins right at the end of the season. Now, and they were trying to get into the playoffs. You know, Torrey Hunter retires today. You know, he'd still be playing maybe if the Royals don't sweep them. But they did. Right. And so they're playing a team that's essentially in their own playoffs, trying to make the real playoffs, the real postseason. But steamrolled right through them. So it was a great sign for me.
All right, so here you are. You How do you feel about the Mets? Give us a preview. How do you feel about the Mets, the series? What are you expecting? What are you afraid of? Go.
What I'm expecting, I think, is 6 or 7 games again. The Mets, their pitching is outstanding, but the Royals' hitting is outstanding, and so it's just going to be a battle of strengths. You know, like who does what better. But I think with the bullpen, the Royals can shut down. You know, they can lock down 3 innings, and you know. The Mets don't have Toronto's power. You can say, yeah, Kelvin Herrera gave up that double to, I think it was to Lewinsky that cleared the bases. And, you know, Mattson gave up that home run to Bautista, you know, in game 6 this weekend. You know, that almost cost him the game. But the Mets don't have bats like that. And Daniel Murphy is hot right now, but, you know, you can't go 7 for 7 in home runs until you play game 7. And right now he's having to wait. Or that until he plays that 7th game. So now he's having to wait 4 days. So that bat, I'm really thinking that bat's going to cool off. Whatever that zone is, I mean, you can always simulate games. You know, you can't actually play them. And so I don't care how much batting practice he's getting right now. I think his bat is going to cool off. There's just, if he does continue, good for you. You have the single greatest playoff performance since Madison Bumgarner last year. So I mean, I just think it's going to be a great series. Royals, I think, will win. Concerns really are Cueto, but again, he can dominate. It's just a matter of if he does it or not. But I think our bats,
it's kind of Jekyll and Hyde in here a little bit. I mean, it's like he's great, he's bad, he's great, he's bad.
No, he definitely is Jekyll. That's his thing. He's you never know what you're going to get, and that's what's so frustrating. The only thing that's a guaranteed. In Kansas City right now with Cueto is that he's not going to be in a Royals uniform ever again in 10 days. So hopefully we just get the best. If he closes out the World Series, to get into his mind, he knows that if he dominates in 2 games and wins like a decisive game 6 or maybe, God forbid, a game 7, then, you know, that's going to add a lot of money into his pockets. I have no idea how much, maybe an extra 50, 80 million. Right now his stock is plummeting. And yeah, there will be teams out there that'll pay him, the Dodgers, you know, maybe San Diego, the Giants, but they'll have to pay him a lot more if he dominates here in this series. So I think he's been a key, and also Alex Rios has come up with 3 or 4 very, very, very large hits, including the hit that started the rally in Houston, a 2 RBI single, the comeback against Toronto, and it. Just a couple big bats. So continued success for Alex Rios, I guess, is what I'm trying to say also. So those are for me, two huge key factors for the Royals.
You're worried about, I mean, you know, if you don't win, how do you feel you'd be?
If you don't win, I think it's going to be fine, too. I mean, obviously, it'd be disappointment, but the fans will still come next year, and they'll probably break the attendance record again. I think the only difference will be there's going to be a free agent pitcher that signs, like a decent named free agent pitcher, if the fit's right. I don't think they force anything, you know, as far as kind of like what they did with Cueto, where they're like, all right, we'll just get this guy right now. We need it. But if there's the right fit, I think they could go after a big pitcher and then just get that solid number 2, number 3 guy. Obviously, is Danny Duffy, hopefully develops and gets his mind right. Volquez, we got him for another year, and Yordano Ventura. So then all of a sudden the pitching staff looks pretty solid. And I think if Zobrist can stay, all signs kind of point that he will. I've just heard a lot of good grumblings from his wife, and she really likes the city and the team, and he apparently really enjoys it as well. So if we can get Zobrist to stay at second base, that's a huge upgrade there. But I think word's getting out that it's Kansas City is a good place to play, and it's a fun place to play, and it's you know, it's a good baseball town and great fans. So who wouldn't want to come there, especially if they're going to be willing to put up the money now to get people there. So that's if they lose and or if they win. But obviously, the city would be devastated. We want to see a parade, but Yeah, we'll just have to wait another, I guess, 8 days and find out. Hopefully not. Hopefully.
We need to start playing Midnight Blue. You know what I'm saying? You guys need to play some Midnight Blue. Get some wind going on.
Oh, no.
Some royal wind. Can't just be giving it up to the Mets.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out. We'll tell you what. Let's we'll take a break. When we get back from break on the other side, we'll be with Mike and Michelle from Man for Iration. Huge sports fan, very avid golfer, an incredible musician. Yeah, so we'll be back right after this.
Perfect. Removing that inevitable disaster. I can't stop it moving far faster. I'm asking, can you own the wheel for a second? I'm new. I just want to make things clear. One cup of coffee and I'm on my way home. No breaks in the danger zone.
All right, we are back on Sportsaholics with Niners super fan Micah Pichel. Micah, look, you're a super fan. That's why we call you when the highs are high and when the lows are low. And how low are the lows right now?
You know, truthfully, the lows are about as low as they've been this year, but they're not. I don't feel like they're any lower than they were last year, even with Harbaugh, you know, going through the turmoil with Harbaugh, knowing that he was probably going to leave, hearing the rumblings, watching the team struggle. I mean, a lot of people forget that last year we played Seattle on a Thursday night game, and we lost 19-3, and we only had 20 more yards of offense than we did in this game. And this is with, you know, the full roster of guys and Harbaugh at the helm. So it's basically the same situation we were in last year, which is the offense is completely inconsistent. We don't know. We don't have an identity. And except that this year the defense just isn't as good. We just give up too many big plays and we're young and the coordinators haven't figured it out yet.
So. I mean, it seemed like as soon as now I'm not a Niners super fan, so you got to help me with some of the names here. But as soon as that second or third year, like up and coming, I think he was a safety, decided to call it quits because he was worried about his health or what, you know, whatever. I forget whatever he said. I think
right.
It was a head thing he was worried about. And then it just this domino effect. Then you had Aldon Smith, who just can't get enough Cavassier, just, you know, and getting behind Carr, you know, doing that shit again, which is just, I mean, come on. What's like, what are you doing? Just how do you
well,
not,
okay.
And, okay, I'm not so, done. Yeah. I'm not done. Then you have Jefferson City's finest. I'm forgetting his first name right now.
Justin Smith.
I mean, the guy used to actually physically assaulted my cousin in high school football games, you know, 18 years ago. This guy was like a man child in high school. I'm sure you can only imagine.
So he
finally retires, and then I think you had maybe one or two additional guys that decided to retire.
Patrick Willis retires. We lost both our starting corners. We lost Ray McDonald, who's another just derelict kind of human, in the same vein as Albin. We lost a lot. I mean, we lost Mike Iupati, our starting left guard, to Arizona. He goes to division rival. We Anthony Davis, our starting right tackle that we spent a first-round draft pick on, retires for 1 year after the draft so that we have absolutely no ability to replace him properly through the draft or, you know.
Now, was that a mental thing? Like, what would cause... Was he just like, you know, I can't handle the pressure, I got to step away? Was it one of those kind of deals?
He suffered a concussion last year. He's like a really cerebral dude. I mean, he's a big, big dude. He went to Rutgers. He was a talented football player, but he's always on Twitter. He's like a very, like, he gets into it with guys on Twitter, you know. He's just one of those kind of players that's very vocal and...
Yeah, he's probably from New Jersey. He's probably from New Jersey.
He's from New Jersey. Yeah, he got a massive concussion last year, and it kept him out for the majority of the season. And so he just wanted to take a year off to kind of like reboot his whole health situation. And he's saying he's going to come back next year, but he's just like he's still under the contract with the Niners. So
Gotcha.
I mean, if he does come back next year, that would be good. But so we lost him. We lost Patrick Willis. You know, we just lost it. We lost Borland was the other guy. It was a linebacker that we lost that retired because he was afraid of concussions and kind of head trauma for the rest of his career, which I can respect.
For sure.
But, yeah, and then we have an entire new coaching staff, so a whole new offense, a whole new defense. So, obviously that's a lot to overcome. In one off season.
What it sounds like you guys under the cover of just wearing the 49ers uniform, you guys actually just have a brand new franchise. Actually, really, if you think about it, having just heard what you said, to start from scratch, you're only bringing back really Kaepernick. As like the figurehead or the face of the franchise, you got to keep that just so people recognize it. But other than that, I mean, you have an entire new franchise there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new look team. It's a different. I mean, we look the same. I'll tell you that the offense still sucks. We look terrible on offense, and we never looked that great on offense with Harbaugh there anyway. I mean, everybody thinks it was this great. You know, things are really dropped off. But honestly, Harbaugh never and Roman never really had the offense singing during the regular season at all. It was always, we'd hit the playoffs and we'd let Kaepernick run and then it would be effective. But during the regular season, he just wasn't that, we weren't as consistent as people, I think, want to believe we were. But we had we were much better on defense and we ran the ball more effectively. So we were able to keep the scores low and keep ourselves in games constantly and kind of just whittle out games just through pure toughness.
Yeah, and you had some great ones. I mean,
we're just too young this year. Yeah, we don't know how to get over that hump and win the close games and kind of finish games off. So,
from an outsider's perspective, offensively, you guys kind of got labeled, and I think for me it would go back, I want to say it was with the 2012 or 13 playoffs, but that back and forth with Drew Brees and the Saints. And so
Yes. You're
on a national spotlight, everyone's watching, and you put up 21 points in like, 8 minutes or whatever it was, back and forth. And so everyone then immediately is like, oh, okay, these guys play on a Saints-type level offensively. And it looked like that for a while. But then, through injuries, every retirements, people are gone. And, I mean, nothing against Carlos Hyde other than he's an Ohio State Buckeye. But, I mean, he's not a feature back in the NFL.
Well, I kind of tend to disagree with that. Only I think Carlos Hyde is a really, really talented back. I just think our offensive line is one of the worst in the NFL.
You know what? Okay. I'll give you that. Sorry, Carlos, because I didn't take into account.
The left side of the line is we have Staley and Boone. They're very good. But everybody else from center all the way out to the right tackle is
garbage.
One of the worst at their position in the entire league. So, and that's going by, the actual Pro Football Focus grades from center, right guard, right tackle. They're literally three of the worst players in the league at their position. Offenses don't work if offensive lines are not good. That's just the bottom line. You're never going to see a single successful winning team without an offensive line that's effective.
No.
Nothing works. So that's the problem.
I see. Okay. So your argument would be he's actually good enough to get what he can get considering these guys are the worst. And it's proven in the NFL. Okay, so sorry, Carlos. I didn't realize you had nothing to run behind. So considering, kudos to you for actually caring enough to fight for those extra few yards.
Well, the additional is that all teams do is stack eight in the box against the Niners, and Colin Kaepernick beat him through the air, which he can't do 75% of the time. So, it's worth noting that there's always going to be an extra guy in the box. So Carlos Hyde is already, he has to pretty much beat one or two guys every single time he touches the ball to get any yardage.
Yeah, it's, he's kind of a bowling ball kind of a guy when he needs to be. Well, okay, let's talk Kaepernick then, because, I mean, he was the savior, looked great, played at, was it the Mountain West, from Nevada, could have been a major league base, could have been David Price, stuck with football, you know, lead you guys to the promised land. Now, so is it done? Is the flame extinguished now? Because I watch it and I just see a guy like that was not that he's a shell of himself. I just think that he was surrounded by such good people, whether offensive line, coaching, you know, whatever defense, you know, they put him in a good situation. It's kind of like a Trent Dilfer with the Ravens, you know, back in the day yeah. where it's like, oh, yeah, Trent Dilfer is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I think it was more of that kind of situation where he couldn't fail. And so now that all that's gone and you're just like, he really can't, it doesn't look like he can, I don't want to say not lead, but I mean, he doesn't have a lot to work with, but it just, it doesn't look good. Are you guys ready for him to move on to Miami or to San Diego? Or?
I mean, in my opinion, I think that what Colin Kaepernick is maybe like a slightly more explosive and athletic game management type quarterback, where you just need what we want him to do and how he's successful is, listen, we're going to run the football. We just don't want you to turn the ball over. When occasionally we're going to ask you to make a big throw or, you know, sling something, make a big run, do something, but we're not going to ask you to have to, like, bring us back from 21 points or something like that, because whenever we do that, it never works.
Well, then you get...
That's just not his strength. So, for us to be successful, yes, for Kaepernick to be successful, we have to be better on defense. We have to run the ball more effectively, and we have to make it easier on him. If that doesn't happen, and then I can see the organization moving on, especially if we finish in a position to pick a quarterback from this draft, like, you know, a Goff or a Connor Cook or something like that, where there's enough of a prospect in the zone of where we might be drafting. If we continue to fall like that the way we are, then we, you know, it's a legitimate, you know, concern that we might have to do that. Plus, he has a gigantic contract. So,
well, and plus, you guys are sitting on a, you know, is this your second year at the Levi's Stadium? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got this brand new, beautiful stadium. I haven't seen it. Haven't been in it yet. Have you attended some games there?
Yeah, I went last year. I watched us beat the Redskins at home.
What's the stadium like? Is it? I mean, do you like? Is it better than Candlestick? I mean, obviously, you lose all that nostalgia and history immediately.
Well, I went and saw us play at Candlestick before they tore it down against the Giants. We played UI, and the year that we lost to them in the NFC Championship, I saw it when we beat them at home that year. It was a great game. And the thing about Candlestick is that it was old and shitty and, like, but it was like a fortress, you know, that was cold. The wind whips through the stadium. It's loud. It's a very vertical kind of stadium, you know, where everybody's on top of the field.
Yeah, those are good stadiums.
It's just one of those places where it was a very, you know, a home field advantage at the highest order. And, Levi's is out in Santa Clara. It's not in San Francisco. You know, it's a 45-minute drive out to Santa Clara. And it's a brand-new stadium. It's very nice. Like, the food and vending is all top-notch. There's an app that goes with there's an app for the stadium. You know, it's in Silicon Valley. It's green. It's all these things. But it's not loud. It's not as loud as the Stick, and they, like, haven't figured out things like the crowd gets completely torched by the sun. It's scorching hot. Somebody died of heat exhaustion or something last year, and, you know, it's just one of those things where they just haven't really, like, figured out all those little kinks out, and so it doesn't have quite that mystique or that aura of a kind of a fortress yet.
And that's like, yeah.
Maybe it will. I mean, I hope it does, but it just isn't there yet.
You got to break it in. I mean, it's going to probably take at least till they have to put the second coat of paint on the stadium here in a couple of years, you know, just to touch it up, just to get some, you know, a couple game winning drives in there, a couple, you know, historic plays possibly. But,
right.
I don't know. I got in a debate over the Yankee Stadium thing. I was talking with a New York guy, and I guess it wasn't really a debate. It was just kind of, the fact that that they tore down old Yankee Stadium, just instead of just renovating it, and I guess ultimately it came down to where the land was and the value of the condos that they're going to build where old Yankee Stadium, it's like, yeah, who cares about Babe Ruth? We're going to make $10 billion. It was, kind of more one of those things and a lot of shady underdoings, but it's hard to say goodbye to the old stadiums. I mean, even as a Royals fan, I made a point to go to St. Louis to go to Old Busch Stadium before they tore that down. Just I was like, I just want to see a game in there. I want to sit in one of those old seats from the 70s that are kind of stiff and don't always go all the way down. And there's no cup holder on the back of the seat. You got to actually set your drink by your feet and try not to kick it over. It's just definitely a more old school kind of a game to take in.
But no, there still are a few stadiums like that around, that you can go to that just, don't offer the, and it's places like Dodger Stadium and Fenway and stuff like that that are just these old, you go there because you want to, it's because of the history, and it's not as much about, the comfort level.
Yeah, that's all about the history, and then for teams like, the Cubs right now or Boston,
right.
Even the Giants NFL, they really thrive on the history. That's a big part of their franchise.
Yeah, that stadium is one of those places that it's like almost like, the candlestick of the East, where it's just a cold, hard, kind of shitty stadium that just is a real home field advantage. When you play there, it sucks. I've been to that field, been in there, and it's not that cool. I've been lucky to go, and I've been to Wrigley. I went to the old Yankee Stadium. I've been to some of these old parks, and they're really cool to be in. But I know from the player standpoint, they can't stand being in it because it's the Oakland Coliseum and blah blah, old candlestick. The players didn't really like it because they walk into these shitty dressing rooms and
zero
toilet flood and blah blah blah. But
yeah, they have to pay for their own drinks out of the vending machine, kind of stuff. It's old school. Speaking on that, having been all around the world and country, and being introduced to different athletes, Give us maybe one or two examples. Who are some of the coolest or most exciting people you've met, from the athletic world, through music that are fans of Iration that you got to meet through that?
Some of the coolest, I'd say. There's some PGA golfers that we've been able to hang out with. A guy named Derek Sapphire that plays in the tour, obviously. Michelle Wee.
Really?
Probably one of the more famous ones.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. She's been out to a number of shows. She's a fan, and we're obviously a fan of hers. Kelly Slater, professional surfer, Iration fan. And then we have, Joe Staley and Daniel Kilgore from the Niners, who are buddies of mine. We're lucky to have, there's a few guys out there. Shane Victorino.
Nice. The Flying Hawaiian.
The Flying Hawaiian. He's a great guy. I hung out with him a bunch of times. He's hilarious.
Well, I'm going to have – okay, because I went to the ALDS game, and not only Hosmer but Moose, they both have Revolution as their walk-up. And I'm like, you guys, you got to share the wealth here. It's like there's more, there's more to walk up to than the same song. And so I know those guys grew up in California and stuff, and through music and everything, hang out with those guys. But I saw online that you're doing January 3rd in the Bay Area, Santa Clara, the San Francisco 49ers concert series. Is that something, is a show like that, do you get more excited for? You're like, okay, there's going to be some pro athletes around, maybe throw the football around a little bit.
I doubt we're gonna be going and meeting any of the athletes. So be there because it's right before the game.
Oh,
but,
okay.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we do have friends and fans on the team that enjoy our music, and the same goes to the San Francisco Giants organization because we've been able to play their park twice. I got to meet Bruce Bochy this last time. And you know, and just to mention another guy that we that is a, actually a good buddy of ours that comes out to the shows is Dallas Braden.
Really?
I
love his commentary.
He's great.
He does a really good job on the MLB Network. You could tell him I said that, and he'll be like, "Who the hell is that?" And he'll be like, "Don't worry about it. You have a fan."
Well, perfect. We can tag me on Twitter, and we'll make it happen.
Hell
on
yeah!
Twitter.
And dude, he was a hell of a pitcher too. He was a good fantasy pitcher back in like 06, 07. Don't forget that.
He's a great guy. He's actually a really nice guy. Really loves the music and the scene, and you know.
Nice.
Hell yeah! I just had a little bit of a Twitter convo with him in regards to the Chase Utley slide the other night.
Yeah.
Kind of in regards to the how Collins handled the whole situation. I thought it was a very classy post game where he didn't blame anybody. He just kind of said that's how it goes, and
you know,
didn't want to start anything.
And you know what? Because he handled it that way, and I don't know if you remember, I believe it was game 4, the last one in New York, where he came out on the crutches and the leg brace. Or no, I guess that would have been game 3. But the crowd goes nuts. The players go nuts. I mean, they tried to compare it to that Willis Reed moment. I think Harold Reynolds did for some reason, even though that was 45 years ago and no one really remembers that. That's under 35. you know, but it definitely brought the team together. And they will look back when the Mets lose to the Royals, they'll look back at that play and they'll say that's the reason the Mets got to the World Series.
You know what? I know. I'm actually rooting for the Royals.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you know, I have the Kansas connection, and
you do.
Being that they made it all the way and they lost against my team last year, I'm rooting for them this year. I think they're gonna win it.
I think they
have what it takes to win this year.
And that's not a stretch either. You know, that's a good bet in Vegas. I remember back in July, I put money down on the Royals just because they were 4-1. I was like, these odds are so horrible. I mean, horribly good that I want to buy this ticket just because I don't think they'll ever have this good of odds to win the World Series ever again. And I just want to document that to prove that 4-1 back in July 2015, you could have gotten the Royals to win the World Series. A horrible bet.
Yeah.
A horrible bet.
But I want to also thank you for my Kansas Jayhawks bet that you threw down for me in Vegas last time I saw you.
No problem. No problem. Yeah, that's right.
I'm actually stoked on the Jayhawks team this year. I think they're gonna be pretty decent.
Okay. All right. I don't know, not to put you on the spot, but we can, you know, what do they have anyone coming back? I know they had that one kid from Lithuania who was like 17. I know they're expecting a lot more out of him physically and actually to, you know, get minutes and develop. But that you like their chances? I know that I believe that ticket said 10-1 odds.
I really think what Kansas has been lacking for the last couple of seasons is the veteran point guard play that they have had like for every year.
You're right. Yeah, there's you haven't seen the Sherron Collins, if you will. You know,
even with the Sherron Collins, they also had the what's his name, Tyrod Taylor.
Oh yes, that's right, Chicago's finest.
Right. So they always have a rotation of two guys and the last 2 years with Frank Mason and the other guy, they just haven't had quite the veteran leadership or the guy that can take over the game at that big point and make the plays. And seriously, that's like what Kansas basketball is really, in my opinion, has always been really, really solid point guard play. And we just haven't had it. I mean, we have the bigs. Last year we had enough. I felt like we had enough shooting, which we haven't had in the past. We always play really, really solid defense. That's Bill Self. But
yeah, that's.
I just felt like we didn't quite have the point guard play that we needed last year to do any sort of damage in the tourney. And I think we all knew we were going to lose to Wichita State just because
they have
really good point guard play.
Well, and it's not just they typically, or at least have been in the last 10 years or so, physical point guards. They're not, they don't just dish the ball out. They don't mind going right up against the center, maybe grabbing a rebound, box, you know, they're physical players. And they score well,
and they're veteran. They have these guys that have been deep in the tourney multiple times. It's like, we just, I, I just, just had that gut feeling we were going to lose that game. You know, I didn't want it to lose, obviously, but
yeah, especially to Wichita State. And if a lot of you guys didn't know, Wichita is actually the taint of the Midwest. Or if you're a lot of people don't realize that it is a horrible town.
The grundle of the Midwest.
Yeah, even I mean,
so to speak.
It even would rival that in smell. I think at some days, I think there's some like a chicken factory there or something. But it is not a pleasant city. I've never enjoyed a second of my life in Wichita, and that is why, if I'm driving to Oklahoma or back to California or through there, I do it as quickly as possible. I make sure I have all my gas, all my food, so I don't have any reason to stop in Wichita. And I only have to spend no more than 17 minutes is how long it takes to drive through that horrible, horrible city. But
shout out to the fine people of Wichita.
Nothing. It's you know, there's some places on the map, like certain things will happen several times over. I remember staying there once and I saw a mouse and so we go in. I'm like, hey, there's a mouse in my room. He goes, well, we'll put you up on the second floor. And I'm like, well, there's probably still going to be mice. You know, mice can climb up stairs or walls or anything. And so, yeah, that was just one of many. anyway, but nothing against you, Wichita. God bless you. I'm sure some good people have come from there. I think Pizza Hut started there and Boeing, you know, airplanes. So God bless
really?
You guys. Yeah. First Pizza Hut was in Wichita in like 1950-something.
That's surprising.
Yeah, and if that's completely made up, I sold it like it was true. But I'm pretty sure that is true. I've heard that several times.
I believed it.
Yeah, thank you. Micah, I'm just going to run through some. You got some shows coming up for those of you in Detroit, coming up Cincinnati, Halloween night, Des Moines the first. Damn, you guys are busy, right? So you're going for pretty much all the way through mid-November. Ending in Los Angeles, all the way through Texas, Albuquerque, Houston, San Antonio. Just go to iration.com, you know, the schedule.
But, iration music.com.
Iration Music, yeah. I'm looking at it right now. iration music.com. Go check out one of those. Micah, thanks for your time again. Thanks for your insight. We went all over the board, and I had no idea Michelle Wee was a fan. That's awesome.
Yep. No problem. I mean, if you know, remember when she won the U.S. Open, we were there actually. We were after partying with her for the U.S. Open.
Okay, Brooke. Okay, I did want to talk golf. Like this, you have seen and played some of the most incredible courses. Some of the pictures you send out, like, are you like, where's your golf game at? I mean, if you don't shoot par, are you mad at you? Are you pissed? Or what's your handicap?
My handicap is actually it's pretty good right now. I'm at a four.
Four?
Right now, so, yeah, and I'm trending downward, so I'm at the lowest that it's ever been, which is good. I've been playing well, but speaking of that, I'm in upstate New York, and we're headed to Long Island tomorrow, and I'm going to be getting out at Bethpage Black tomorrow, Bethpage Golf Course tomorrow, which is a U.S. Open venue and another kind of historic, great course.
And so you're talking... It's not four handicap at the local municipal court or course. You're playing like legitimate, you know, PGA Tour courses, U.S. Open courses, you know, these with sand traps, you know, and with narrow fairways.
I mean, we played TPC Sawgrass on this tour, which is another, you know, everybody knows that if they played Tiger Woods Golf on Xbox or PlayStation.
Oh yeah.
Kiowa Island, we've done that. We've done a number of really, really great courses while we've been on tour, and this is just another one. So,
hell yeah!
I'm really excited. It's kind of these bucket list courses where you want to get out once or twice in your lifetime. It's always a good experience.
Well, especially this time of the year, fall. You know, it's going to be probably like 55 degrees, and yeah, it'll be perfect weather for fall golf.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So
I'm really excited.
What's the strength of your golf game? Are you talking putting, mid-range, driving, kind of like equal in all areas?
The strength of my game is definitely the consistency of the driver, and I'm pretty good with the around the green, the wedge, and pretty good at getting up and down. So yeah, make a lot of pars.
That's important.
Not a lot of
I wouldn't say make a lot of birdies, but if the day is right, I can make some birdies. But it's mostly just I'm able to get up and down, and I generally putt pretty consistently, so I two putt a lot.
Hey, as
don't
long
three putt as much.
Yeah, as long as you avoid the like the sixes and sevens on the scorecard, you're golden.
Yeah, that's key.
Well, all right. Now we'll get out of here. Thanks, Micah, for your time. It's been awesome. We'll have to catch up soon. And America, if you're in Albany, all the way to the East Coast, all the way back to the Midwest, Ohio, Iowa, Oklahoma, Texas, guys, go to irationmusic.com. Go see Iration in concert. They're incredible. And Micah, we'll talk soon, all right?
Thanks, buddy.
All right, man. Be good.
All right, thanks.
Thanks again, Mike, for coming on. Go to irationmusic.com, and they're touring all over America until the end of November, right?
Amazing.
Up to Thanksgiving.
Amazing. Love them. Love the stories. Michelle Wee, love that.
And it's
by
just,
the way, my father originally said one of the sexiest things is watching a woman address the ball in golf. It's like it's one of those little-known sexy things because women don't even know how sexy they are when they're get that little waggle before they hit the golf ball.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember Bill Murray in Caddyshack. One of a classic scene, if you will. He's like, yeah, wiggle those hips. And then they're, I think, 75, 80-year-old women. But, Mike, again, thanks for coming on, talking with us. Best of luck the rest of your tour. Smooth travels. And irationmusic.com. Sportsaholics listeners, go check that out. And thanks again for listening. For you sports, you diehard fans, you guys that are doing the long commutes in your car right now, look at the guy to the left of you. If he's a sports fan, I think some of you maybe have done this because our numbers, our listeners have continued to go up. Say, hey, you listen to sports right here. Go to Stitcher. Go to iTunes. For whatever reason, Stitcher seems to be the popular forum to find the show. So whatever. Whatever you're doing, thanks for doing it, and thanks for help spreading the word in doing.
Hey, by
that.
The way, for everybody listening out there, just so you know when this is recorded, this is happening right now at the 4:26 mark of Monday Night Football. Just so you know, it's right now at the exact moment we're taping this. It is 26-16 Arizona Baltimore as the Ravens are trying to go for a 2-point conversion, but just got called for a flag. That's just a little inside the
and
inside.
I'm sure Micah is hope watching and rooting if he's not on stage in front of 2,000 people rooting for that Cardinal loss. So that the Niners season isn't over. I mean they're 3-4. They can there's plenty. They're completely depleted of talent and of experience. And you know, like Micah said, they've got no.
Can we talk about something serious? What I really want to talk about is how every team in the NFL, what every team in the NFL wants is to be in the AFC South. Because the AFC South is such a crappy division that you can be under 500 and still be in first place. Let's all talk about how lucky Andrew Luck and the Colts are to be in such a crappy division that they can be under 500 and still in first place. Because the AFC South with the Indianapolis Colts, the Houston Texans, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Tennessee Titans are so terrible. That division is so terrible that literally almost any other team could walk in from any other division and own that entire division. By the way, the 4-2 Jets, the Patriots, my Patriots, very happy to beat the 4-1, now 4-2 Jets. That was a very scrappy game. I've been very worried about the Jets all season long. And I actually call him their submarine commander head coach because he went radio silent. He's the exact antithesis of Rex Ryan. Instead of being loud in public, remember, the Geno Smith, the starting quarterback of the New York Giants, had his jaw broken in the preseason. Wasn't a problem. The Jets cruised the 4-1 silently. Now 4-2. But if they were in the AFC South, they would have a stranglehold on that division. The AFC South is the worst division in football and should be voted out of the NFL. That's what I'm going to say. We should vote them out. They're terrible.
That's what people said about the NFC West for years up until a couple years ago. You know, it comes and goes, but yeah, there's not. It's looking pretty bad. I thought the Texans. I mean,
the NFC West happens right now. The NFC West, I would say, is arguably the best division. With, I mean, look, you have a two-time Super Bowl a champion, a repeater. The Cardinals have had two great seasons. They're doing great this year. The Niners went 2 years ago, and the Rams are amazing in division.
They're screwed.
Have great
yeah,
against everybody, and they're scrappy. That might be the best division currently in the NFL.
Yeah, maybe for the last few years even. And the Rams are always scrappy, and you're just like, oh, wow, that's just – it sucks you have to play all those guys twice a year. That's unfortunate, but you got to figure it out or else you're going to – but, yeah, and they do.
Put the Rams, the Niners, the Seahawks, or the Cardinals in the AFC South, and they are rolling. They are ruling shit. Ruling. Because the AFC South is terrible. It is absolutely an abomination of anything that's ever been called football.
So, okay, I wanted you to talk to Cubs fans, having gone through the curse yourself, and we're going to end this segment.
Yeah, I'm
with,
happy to talk to Cubs fans right now.
And we'll end the segment here. I just want to play. I recently discovered the Go All the Way, Eddie Vedder song. What have you heard that?
I don't know.
It's the song to the Cubs fans about being a Cubs fan.
Oh.
It's an incredible song.
I have not heard it. Play it so the audience.
Yeah, we'll play it. But first, after I want you to just talk to Cubs fans. Let them know what the future's going to be like, and that maybe it'll be okay. And you know, time will tell.
Look, here's what I want to say, and this goes. I'm gonna take the Cubs fans back a bit. I'm gonna take them back to 2003, because in 2003, both the Boston Red Sox, my team, and the Chicago Cubs, your team, Chicago Cubs fan, we're both five outs away from going to the World Series in 2003. And neither of us made it that year. But here's the thing. That was the year that you guys had Bartman, and we had the grady little Pedro Martinez problem. And then we fired Grady Little. We got out of that. We had the greatest comeback. And then we won, and we ended our curse. But here was the thing. There was a point in 2003... I want to say this to Cubs fans. There was a point where you guys were a little bit too happy to be like, we're cursed too. Look at what happened with Bartman. We're just like you. We're also cursed. It's like, let me just say this. Cubs fans, you don't want to be cursed. You don't want to be lovable losers anymore. You've been lovable losers for over 108 years. It's good enough. You've done it. You are, in many ways, America's team. I'm rooting for you. And I really wanted, I'll say this, I said to Sheezer when we were off air, I said to Sheezer, you know, no other team had come back from down 0-3 to win the series. And I would have been very happy to have shared that honor, that historical marker, with the Chicago Cubs, especially a Joe Madden coached, a Theo Epstein-led Manny Ramirez as part of it. Against a New York team, I would have loved to do all of that. I was very pro Cubs, especially I was totally on board with the Back to the Future thing. But here's the thing, Cubs fans. You're going to get there again, and it's time to win. And this is what I want to say to all Cubs fans, and I want you to hear me. Before I watch Game 7 of the 2004 Yankees-Red Sox, I watched Rocky II. Rocky II is the greatest movie ever made because it has all the good scenes from Rocky I and Rocky II. And the most important thing, Rocky II is about winning. It's not enough to go the distance with a champ anymore. You guys, Cubs fans, you've been going the distance. You've proved you could actually win in Wrigley, which is amazing. You could actually win a playoff series in Wrigley. But now, 2016, 2017, 2018... Chicago Cubs, it's time to win. Get Adrian out of the coma and win. 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 That's what I'm going to say to all Cubs fans. I believe in you. Never stop believing. Don't stop believing, like Journey says. Believe. Win. It's the greatest feeling of all time when your team that could never win actually wins. It's the best thing ever. So do it. I'm on your side.
And that's what this entire Eddie Vedder song is all about. Go all the way. Yeah, we'll just go into it. We'll be right back after the song. Yeah, Eddie Vedder. Huge Cubs fan, if you didn't know that, from Chicago. I just learned that a couple weeks ago.
Forever will win, and if we should lose, we know someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, someday we'll go all the way. We are one with the Cubs we're in love. Yeah, hold our head high as the underdog.
Mookie Blaylock, when they tried to name the band after the starting point guard from the Atlanta Hawks from 1992.
Yeah, Mookie Blaylock is a great name for a band. That is why the band, that's why the first album was called 10, because that was Mookie Blaylock's number.
Yeah,
I'm going to say this. You know what? I'm gonna, on the other side of this, I just want to say I just opened a fortune cookie, which I feel is dedicated to all Cubs fans. I just opened it. Here's what the fortune cookie says. It says, be calm. Like the giant tree in a storm.
There you go.
For you will, Cubs fans. Be calm like a giant tree in a storm.
And the roots are there, Cubs fans. They're entrenched, so don't worry. You'll get another shot. I just to go back to that thing, it just don't box up the Schwarber ball, and you just, I'm watching it like there's no way. You just, you can feel the curse or what. It's like they don't want to win. I know they want to win, but
you gotta want it. You gotta want it so bad that, and there's a point where, and this is true, Sheezer, I want all Royals fans to hear me. These things aren't easy. It's easy to think it looks easy that Joe Montana won four, that Derek Jeter won four, that so and so. It looks so easy. Jordan won six, and it looks so easy from the outside. But when you're a fan, you know the difference. It's that each one of these things is precious. The opportunities are precious. You know, teams only get certain windows. Like, look at the 49ers. We just had an interview from a diehard 49er fan. And if you would have asked him 2 years ago, they were coming off a Super Bowl trip, and they had Colin Kaepernick, and the world was their oyster. But now Harbaugh's gone. Kaepernick looks terrible. Half their defense retired. These windows close very quickly sometimes.
No, it's great. That's what makes sports great, is because if you don't appreciate it, then it can be gone. Texas back in 11 and 12, you know, back to back, or 12 and 13, whatever years those were. Or no, it wasn't 13, I guess.
Right.
That was your year. Or the Bills in the early 90s, you know, a lot of people reference Dan Marino, you know, right out of the box.
Right. You know how hard it was? It's like, think about it. It's like, you know, for Jim Kelly to lose four Super Bowls took so much work. It's real easy to shit on Jim Kelly and the Bills for losing four Super Bowls, or the Vikings, or like, there was a point where Donovan McNabb and Andy Reid of the Eagles, they went to four consecutive NFC championships. It's like, to get close and not get all the way in, it takes so much sometimes. That's my message for today. It's like the Red Sox went through so much. It's a whole season. It's 162 games, and you're back. Like, here you are, Royals, and you're back with another chance. Go get it. You know what I'm saying? It's like Cubs fans, you know, it's like maybe next year, absolutely. And attack it. Attack it. Because you don't know how many bites of an apple you ever have. You can think that this guy, your phenom freshman, your unbelievable rookie, we love Nomar Garciaparra. But guess what? When we won a World Series, Nomar Garciaparra gets a ring, but he was traded for it. You know what I'm saying? You always be amazed. Look, you're on the eve of World Series, and you're still talking about Greinke back. it's crazy out there, and these windows open and close, and you've got to get it when it's your time. So go and get it now.
Yeah, you got to appreciate it. And that's, you know, that's one thing, that, you know, in watching the Cubs dance around, you were like, you know what, there's nothing is guaranteed. And like John Huck said last week, there are high expectations for the future, and a lot of people agree with those. But you never know who gets hurt. You never know who blows out an arm. You know, upsets happen, and baseball is great. You know, only
I should say this, that by the way, you remember that all the Back to the Future predictions was made on a pre-wild card divisional series, that there wasn't, like, you know, remember when the date that they chose, there usually was a World Series champion by that date. Now we have it goes so deep into October, you usually don't have
November.
A champion right around Halloween.
Yeah. It's like November 12th now for some reason. It's interfering with college bowl games now, the baseball playoffs. Well, Eric, this has been episode 89, the Mike Didka. Guys, go to onelovely.com, onelovely.com. If you need anything printed up, shirts, hoodies, hats, they will do it. They will do it cheap, and they'll do it fantastic quality.
Wait, what's that name? Because I love these stuff printed up. What's it called?
It's onelovely.com, onelovely, onelovely.com, based in Kansas City. They also got a bunch of great one-offs, some Royal stuff, baseball stuff, a little bit of everything. So, and then, let's not forget the show up, go up, open mic. And Eric, though you are in the East Coast experiencing the beautiful colors of the fall in New England, tell me about this.
I'm not really allowed to say, but I am a top secret assistant to Bill Belichick for the month of October. I haven't been able to talk about it. That's what I'm doing. But you can follow me on Twitter, on Ozat Marino, on Facebook, Eric Marino. Find me on the show up, go up, open mic variety show on Twitter, on Periscope, on Facebook. Also check out Verbal Violence, the Roast Battle podcast. And I always like to support my good friends, Clea and Ed, and the Clea and Ed podcast that also came from the show up, go up every Sunday night, 11 to 1, at the world famous Comedy Store. Except the last Sunday of the month, where we'll now have a storytelling open mic with Kyle Ray. Kyle Ray will now do at the end of the month. Will not be a show up, go up. That's for the future.
Yep, absolutely. And again, love Ed Greer, Kansas City Chiefs fan. So guys, at Sportsaholics, at Show Up, Go Up, Open Mic, Oh That Marino on Twitter. Guys,
Royal fans, go win it.
Yeah.
Cubs fans, go win it next year.
Mets fans, Cubs fans, baseball fans, just tune in, okay? It's going to be a great series. It's going to be great baseball. Guys, thanks for listening. Stay obsessed.
Hey, by the way, let me just say this. If you're ever depressed about your life, just watch the Tom Brady Under Arm commercial every single day, no matter what. You'll feel better about your life. And with that said, stay obsessed. I'm Eric Marino. That's John Cheeser with the Sportsaholic.
Traditions and wishes made new, a place where our grandfathers, fathers, they grew, a spiritual feeling if I ever knew. And if you ain't been, I am sorry for you. When the day comes for that last winning run, and I'm crying and covered in